Good morning, good morning, and welcome. It's 10:10 a.m. on Monday morning, June the 18th. We're excited to welcome you to episode 40 of Coffee with the Coder. And I have Heather this morning. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, everybody.
And I have Rusha. Good morning, Rusha.
Good morning, everybody.
Thank you for calling in. I see some numbers I have never seen before, so I'm excited to welcome all of you to the call today. And let's just jump right in because I know you've got some lovely things to talk about and we want to make sure we get done in 10 to 15 minutes. So I think I'm going to start with you, Heather, if that's okay. We've got a question from one of our previous winners, Ida in Georgia. And this time her question is, could you ask the pros what the diagnosis code would be for non-epileptiform convulsions? So these are like seizures and non-epileptic events. So what would that type of code be?
So for a non-epileptiform convulsion or a non-epileptic event seizure, you're going to report code R56.9, which is an unspecified convulsion. And underneath that term in the ICD-10 book, you'll see a couple of other terms that line up with what a non-epileptiform event is. You'd see convulsion, seizure, not otherwise specified, things like that. So if you go into the ICD-10 book and you look up the term convulsions or seizures, you have a lot of very specific conditions underneath that that you can choose from. Unfortunately, non-epileptic is not one of them. However, if you go back and you look at those main terms, either convulsion or seizure, both of them are going to lead you to that R56.9 code. And even though as coders, we don't generally want to use those unspecified codes. In this situation, because we don't have any further information as to what the cause of the seizure was, the unspecified code would be most appropriate.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you. That made it much more clear for me, and I hope for those of you in the audience as well. So, Rusha, I'm going to throw one to you. We're going to go to Arizona, and our friend Ron is asking. He says he wants to clarify some codes because sometimes it's a little confusing with the three etiologic, so but from that, I'm assuming that Ron is in an inpatient rehab. He says the patient is in RIC 17, and the IGC is 8.4. So he's using S as in Sam, 72.92XA, and S72.91XA, and S 22.09A as the etiologic. So then the comorbidities are S22.32XD for David and S01.01XB and two more, S02.40C as in
Charlie, D as in David, and S10.11XD.
With no other injuries. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think as etiologics, they look great because you want to list as many important factors as you can in this scenario because there's multiple factors. But because both S72.92XA for the fracture of the left femur and S72.91XA fracture of the right femur are 60% qualifying fractures for IGC 8.4 alone, you probably want to list that third fracture, the 722.079A for the T9 to T10 vertebra fracture as a comorbidity with the seventh character of D because you already have the two femur fractures that are qualifying and you don't need the third as the etiologic. But it can't hurt, so if that third is still in there, it's fine.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I love it the way you guys just make it a lot more clear for me. Now, I'm not a coder. I am a techie, but I love all this detail, okay? I'm going to take another question back over to Heather. We're still in Arizona, and Tiffany has sent this question about whether or not to include a code on the IRFPI. And she's also in an inpatient rehab. That's who uses an IRFPI. So she says, is it correct to include a code for dysphagia on the IRFPI if the patient is admitted on a mechanical soft diet with documentation by the physician of dysphagia, but the speech therapy documents no overt indication of dysphagia in a swallow evaluation completed the day after discharge? Tiffany says the dysphagia was coded because it was documented by the physician. Does the completion of the swallow evaluation utilization of resources justify the inclusion of the dysphagia code on the IRFPA?
Yeah, this actually happened to a friend of mine when she was in rehab. So in order to support that reporting of the dysphagia, you need to quickly review your acute record and see if the patient actually did have it when they were in acute care. In the case of my friend, the acute record said that she did not have dysphagia, and the IRF record said that she did have dysphagia. She didn't actually have the dysphagia, but she was put on a liquid diet for 2 weeks and saw speech therapy. And it was likely a result of a copy and paste or misreading, which happens pretty regularly. The challenge is to support that the diagnosis actually existed and that it was treated or that it impacted treatment. So if the physician made an error, you would need to recommend an addendum to correct the note itself.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me just see. I think we've got time for one more, do you think? I can toss another one over to Risha. Okay, so this one is from Angie, and it looks like Angie might be in an inpatient rehab because it mentions the IRFPI. Let's see what we find. Angie says that on a recent webinar that I attended, the speaker indicated that a BMI of greater than 35 could be used as morbid obesity for the IRFPI if the rehab MD clearly links the BMI to being problematic with recovery. Have you heard that before?
Oh, yes. We've actually heard that a lot. So the National Institute of Health actually indicates that a patient with a BMI 40 or higher or a patient with a BMI of 35 or higher with certain comorbidities is considered clinically morbidly obese. So those comorbidities include things like diabetes, heart disease, sleep apnea, osteoarthritis of weight-bearing joints, or hypertension. They're linked with a BMI of 35 or greater. And if the if documentation can provide cause and support of the morbid obesity being connected to it, then yes, you can definitely say that a BMI of 35 is considered morbidly obese. And we actually have a little bit more information on that. We can give you guys the link on that as well at the end of this episode.
Okay, so I will post that when we post today's call in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And those of you who want to review it can download the document, because I see that you've provided a obesity guidelines document.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. That was wonderful. Okay, so now it's getting to be about time for us to have a mugging. Let's find out which one of these wonderful people are going to be mugged by Coffee with the Coder today. I've been writing all the names down on little scraps of paper on my desk, and let's find out, drum roll please, the winner is Angie. That last question, so congratulations.
Awesome.
Angie, I'm going to find you and find out how to get this mug to you, and I'm going to ask everyone to please turn in your questions, because we're eager to get more of these delightful questions for the next episode, which will be in 2 weeks on July the 2nd at 10:10 in the morning. So we invite you to call in for that and do send in your questions. And if you'd like to come to the webinar this Thursday, just look over at smarter.aq-iq.com where you get all the details. And we'll post this call on social media this afternoon.